Guys, here's the first big phase one dump of information from Pam Bondi in February, but we never hear we're going to get the victims justice. We care about how the victims feel right now. We're going to try to move this along in a way that gets the victims and those survivors that have been working so hard to speak up justice. That's not happening. So it is a level of injury that is painful.
We just have 30 seconds, but I don't want to end before you talk about trauma, before you talk about PTSD, or as you call it, PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury, of the survivors at this point.
What I think people assume is that we are just struggling emotionally, and what they lack, what the What happens for me, I should, I'm speaking for me now, is that the pain is physical. It's fatigue, it's stomach aches, it's heart palpitations, it's headaches, it's insomnia, it's anxiety, it's an inability to just calm my nerves down. So it has physical repercussions that I think people are not aware of.
Jess Michaels, I want to thank you so much for speaking out. 1991 Epstein rape survivor. She was 22 at the time. Now she's head of an organization called Three Joannes. That does it for our program. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Neocony Coast Art and Music Cultural Foundation, presenting Rockaway Beach Music Festival and All Ages Music and Arts Festival in Rockaway Beach on August 16th and 17th. The event will feature live music, local food, art exhibits, and local craft vendors. More info at rbmusicfest.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an intense heat wave will hit Oregon this weekend.
Open Signal is putting on a community building event on Saturday called Amplify PDX.
And in national news, a judge has halted additional construction on Alligator Alcatraz. The tensions continue in the facility.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 8th, 2025. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm John Nelson. On Saturday, August 9th, Open Signal will host a block party to build a collaborative community network of support and fundraising. Amplify PDX is put on by over 20 grassroots organizations from Portland and was motivated by the widespread funding cuts occurring all over the country. The event aims to bring organizations and individuals from the community together, telling stories and cultivating community solidarity and making room for partnerships. It is, as Courtney Ray of Open Signal said in a recent press release, a quote, collective strategy for resource sharing and mutual support. The itinerary is packed from 1 to 7 p.m. with live music, film screenings, art making, tabling, poetry, and food carts. Morgan and Ambush will record a live podcast on the main stage for news with My Fiancé. The event will share the proceeds with the different organizations involved. Ray writes, quote, "The event aims to bring a new kind of philanthropy that centers collaboration over competition and invests directly in community leadership."
A major heat wave is headed this way. Oregon and southwest Washington are heading into a stretch of dangerous summer temperature elevations, with forecasters warning that thermometers may pass 100 degrees beginning this weekend and peaking early next week. While today was relatively mild, with highs in the 70s and 80s for most of Oregon, the heat will soon build rapidly. Coastal areas south of Cape Blanco, particularly near Brookings, will begin to warm earlier due to the Chetco effect, a downslope wind pattern which causes sharp temperature spikes. By Sunday and Monday, large portions of the state are expected to experience extreme heat, with temperatures well north of 100 degrees in many inland areas especially. Looking at specific areas, Portland and the Willamette Valley have a 60 to 85% chance of reaching 100 degrees or higher. Medford is forecast to hit 106 degrees, with a 40% chance of reaching 110 degrees. And eastern Oregon, including the Columbia Basin and inland valleys, will see highs in the mid-90s. Surprisingly, fire danger remains low for now. In addition to the high temperatures, overnight lows in many urban areas, including Portland, may not fall below the mid-60s. Warmer nights increase the risk of heat-related illnesses. Health officials tell us that heat-related illnesses are preventable. Drinking plenty of fluids, staying cool indoors, and wearing light clothing are some ways people can protect themselves.
ICE plans a new detention center in Indiana. President Trump considers taking over the D.C. police. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vero with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
100,000 beds would create more efficiencies and allow ICE agents to arrest more bad people on the street. And with us hiring at a massive rate, more boots on the ground, meaning arresting more criminals, which means we need more beds.
Borders our Tom Homan says he's eager to get more ICE detention centers running as the agency ramps up immigration arrests. What he's calling the Speedway Slammer plan for Indiana would add 1,000 beds, part of a state and federal partnership to add 80,000 migrant detention spots. A federal judge is halting construction of Florida's Alligator Alcatraz for 2 weeks to determine if the work violates environmental laws. Meanwhile, a new report from Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff found hundreds of cases of human rights abuses at ICE detention centers nationwide, including mistreatment of children and pregnant women, sexual abuse, and denial of legal representation. This comes after three New York lawmakers were trapped inside an ICE center in Brooklyn. While attempting to visit the Metropolitan Detention Center, three Democratic members of Congress were themselves detained for about 45 minutes. During their visit, officials put the prison into lockdown, blocking them from touring or leaving the site. A separate report from the Prison Policy Initiative finds almost 60,000 migrants detained at the centers, but around 26,000 more are in local jails, typically brought in by the U.S. Marshals Service. Wanda Bertram with the Prison Justice Group says local government contracts with the marshals are being used to aid in mass arrests.
No matter what they have been used to do in the past, holding people who are awaiting trial for other federal crimes, they are currently being used, no doubt about it, to hold immigrants for trumped-up immigration-related crimes.
Most detained migrants have no criminal record and only face civil charges. ICE leadership says these cases would not have previously been treated as crimes. In line with efforts to run Washington, D.C. directly, President Donald Trump says he'll try to overturn the law granting home rule and take over the city's police, citing an attempted carjacking of a former administration employee. He says crime in the Capitol is out of control.
What a shame. The rate of crime, the rate of muggings, killings, and everything else. And that includes bringing in the National Guard, maybe very quickly, too.
In fact, the number of violent crimes has fallen by a quarter in the last year, reaching a 30-year low. At the same time, the administration is pulling nearly $90 million from New York State's counterterrorism and public safety funding. Critics note this comes a week after four people were killed in a mass shooting in Midtown Manhattan. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will take complete control of the Gaza Strip as a way to rid Palestine of Hamas's leadership, and according to the Times of India, the White House won't try to block it. Humanitarian groups charge Gaza is now in full-blown famine, and Georgia Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock says Netanyahu is weaponizing starvation.
It is wrong to starve children to death. It is wrong to starve people to death. Yet in this moment, we are witnessing a famine unfold among children and innocent men and women in Gaza, the world's largest open-air prison.
After delays and demands to work out deals, Trump's tariffs on all U.S. trading partners are in effect. With higher or lower exceptions for individual products, most imports from the European Union, Japan, and South Korea face a 15% import tax. Imports from Taiwan, Vietnam, and Bangladesh face 20% tariffs. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacific Network and Public News Service.
The mayor and the governor both want to hold on to Portland's Trail Blazers NBA team. Hannah Francis has more with reporting from Josh Salem.
Portland Mayor Keith Wilson's quarterly calendar released earlier this week indicates that Wilson met with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver in early June, demonstrating the city's commitment to keeping the Blazers in town. Wilson had a half-hour call with Silver in June. The meeting occurred less than a month after Paul Allen's estate announced the Trailblazers were up for sale. Wilson and Governor Tina Kotek signed a letter to Silver highlighting the city and state's commitment to the franchise and discussing renovations to the publicly owned Moda Center. Cody Bowman, a spokesperson for the mayor, said, quote, "The city is committed to working collaboratively across jurisdictions to ensure the Trailblazers remain a cornerstone of Portland's cultural and economic landscape," end quote. The Trailblazers are one of 30 NBA franchises. They have a 5-year lease at the Moda Center that ends in 2030, with an option for a 5-year extension, making them portable if a new owner wants to relocate the franchise. During a July 15th press conference, Silver said that the team wants to stay in Portland. But one major factor in the Trailblazers' sale is that Portland apparently needs a new arena, which would be a challenge for any new owner. Silver did not elaborate on whether major renovations to the Moda Center would suffice or whether a new arena is a necessity. The Moda Center is one of the oldest non-renovated arenas in the NBA. A collection of former Blazers players, executives, and civic business leaders have recently launched Rip City Forever, a group aimed at keeping the Blazers in Portland. They are calling on city and state leaders to renovate the Moda Center or find a better alternative. Wilson and Kotek did say the Moda Center is the best location. They appear willing to explore public-private partnerships to achieve that goal. And Portland plans to contribute roughly $4 million toward installing new video boards at the arena. Sports teams are always in high demand to a very select group of potential buyers. The Boston Celtics, for example, recently sold for $6.1 billion, the highest price ever paid for an NBA team. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
Community health centers are celebrating their 60-year anniversary this week, and new data show they are serving more patients every year in Oregon and across the country. Isabel Charlie has more on the story.
Community health centers are celebrating their 60-year anniversary this week, and new data show they are serving more patients every year in Oregon and across the country. Nationwide, CHCs served a record 32.4 million patients last year, 1 million more than the year before. Oregon has 34 CHCs, many located in rural areas. Marty Carty of the Oregon Primary Care Association says they provide mission-driven care focused on lifting patients up.
Folks are turning to a community health center because there is no insurance card check at the door. There's no income requirement at the door. The answer is come one, come all, and we'll provide high quality, integrated primary behavioral and oral health care.
But CHCs could face severe financial challenges with some federal funding set to expire in September if Congress doesn't take action. CHCs serve people regardless of their insurance status or ability to pay, and they largely serve low income patients. In many rural parts of the country, Cardi says CHCs, also known as federally qualified health centers or FQHCs, are the only providers around.
And in Oregon, that's really true. People are driving more than 90 miles just to get their health care at the FQHC, because there just isn't another provider option.
Cardi points out that community health centers deliver primary care to more than 10% of the U.S. population for a fraction of the operating expenses of other providers. He says they're able to save the system money overall, in part because the care is holistic.
We have this integrated model of care where primary, behavioral, and oral health care are all under one roof, and then coupling that with transportation and housing and food support.
If Congress doesn't renew funding, the National Association of Community Health Centers says many centers will have to scale back or cut patient services. Cardi says it's too early to say whether any CHCs in Oregon will have to close due to the funding cuts, but it's likely many will face more financial stress. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather is a high of 81 and a low of 57. Tomorrow's weather is also moderately hot, just entering the heat wave with a high of 87 and a low of 62. Over the weekend, Sunday and Monday will reach highs of 97 degrees both days and lows of 67. The mid to late week will begin to cool off again with highs in the mid-70s. Stay hydrated, folks. Today in 1974, Richard Nixon announced that he was resigning from the presidency after the Watergate scandal proved to have caused more damage than he could mitigate. The quote of the day is from American lawyer Samuel Dash. He said, quote, "Watergate was unique because it allowed the public to play its democratic role in expressing its outrage at the presidency. And as a result, for the first time in history, a president resigned."
Nonprofit Native American Rights Fund hosts a tribal water symposium with the Western States Water Council. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonio Gonzalez. The Native American Rights Fund hosted a tribal water symposium this week in partnership with the Western States Water Council. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, Interior Department officials took time to reassure tribes that the Trump administration is behind them, despite recent staffing cuts and Congress clawing back federal dollars.
Some of the federal agency's top-ranking water tribes to come up with very creative solutions. As for the Colorado River and its ongoing negotiations, they warn consensus is needed before 2026. Otherwise, Interior will be forced to step in.
We will if we have to. If we can't get people to come to a settlement and agree, that settlement needs to include the tribes.
Kathy Bud Fallon is an advisor to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. The seven basin states and 30 tribes have until October 1st of next year.
But if the interim guidelines expire, then reclamation gets to run the river. And I'm telling you, you do not want a bunch of bureaucrats from Washington, D.C. running the Colorado.
President Donald Trump tapped former CAP General Manager Ted Cook to helm the Bureau of Reclamation pending Senate approval. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Alaska's Office of Children's Services is failing to meet benchmarks set by a 2018 reform law, according to a final state audit. About 70% of children in its care are Alaska Native and American Indian. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
Former lawmaker Les Guerra is a Democrat from Anchorage and introduced the legislation in 2017. It aimed to make things better for Alaska's foster kids by improving hiring and training practices at OCS. And the law required a series of audits to check progress. Guerra says the audit results are extremely disheartening.
It's like we handed the state the blueprint of all the gold standard practices to make sure children had a chance in this world. And by 2020, the state had lit it on fire. It's sad.
He says in the first 2 years of the law, the state saw some progress. But then the office dramatically lowered hiring requirements for caseworkers. Instead of requiring a 4-year college degree in social services or equivalent experience, now caseworkers can get hired with just a high school diploma. A legislative consultant quoted in the audit called the training and support woefully insufficient for most new hires, and that new caseworkers started with little to no understanding of what the job actually entailed. Amanda Mativier helped write the legislation and runs the organization Facing Foster Care.
This is not entry-level work.
holding the authority to remove children from their parents and investigate allegations of child abuse and neglect. And it takes a skill set that requires some foundation.
OCS didn't agree to an interview for this story, but spokesperson Brian Studstill wrote in an email that their hiring practices factor in the experience and education of the applicant. He wrote that it's impossible to actually cap caseloads because the agency can't turn away families. But he wrote, OCS takes many steps to keep caseloads manageable. Deco Harby, who entered foster care in 2021 when she was 16, had to fend for herself. When she was a junior in high school, she says she left the chaos of her placement with her then 23-year-old sister without telling OCS. She moved in with a friend's family.
Without them intervening and, like, coming in to help me that last year of high school, I don't think I would have graduated.
She calls them her chosen foster parents and says they were caring and helped her transition to adult life. She says that's how the foster system in Alaska could work if it were functional. I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In a significant ruling, a federal judge in Florida has ordered a 14-day halt to additional construction at the controversial detention facility known as Alligator Alcatraz. Immigrant detention and other operations will continue unaffected. This decision follows lawsuits claiming the facility harms the surrounding habitats in the Florida Everglades. Federal Judge Kathleen M. Williams issued a temporary restraining order stating that Florida cannot install any additional lighting, paving, or fencing at the center. This pause allows the court time to fully review the case. The facility, part of President Trump's immigration crackdown, has faced criticism for its environmental impact as well as its inhumane living conditions. Built on an airstrip in the Big Cypress National Preserve, Alligator Alcatraz has sparked lawsuits from environmental groups. They argue it was constructed without the necessary ecological studies and lacked public notice prior to its establishment. Eve Samples, executive director of Friends of the Everglades, stated, quote, "We're pleased that the judge saw the urgent need to put a pause on additional construction, and we look forward to advancing our ultimate goal of protecting the unique and imperiled Everglades ecosystem from further damage caused by this mass detention facility," end quote. Despite the halt, Alex Lanfranconi, communications director for Governor Ron DeSantis, emphasized that the ruling would not affect immigration enforcement in Florida. He stated, quote, "Alligator Alcatraz will remain operational, continuing to serve as a force multiplier to enhance deportation efforts," end quote. And he labeled Judge Williams as a quote-unquote activist judge.
A new peer-reviewed study shows Idaho lost more than one-third of its obstetrician, gynecologist, or OBGYN doctors after the implementation of strict abortion bans in 2022. After the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Idaho trigger laws came into effect, making abortion or an attempt to perform an abortion illegal. While there were exceptions for the imminent death of the mother or in case of rape or incest documented by a police report, penalties included taking doctors' licenses away, felony charges, minimum jail time, and fines. Researchers from Idaho assessed the possible effects of the laws in terms of the number of practicing Idahoan OBGYNs between August 2022 and December 2024. While Idaho did recruit 20 obstetric physicians over those next two-plus years, 114 of 268 physicians stopped practicing obstetrics, left the state, closed their practices, or retired. Susie Keller, CEO of the Idaho Medical Association, said, quote, "Idaho is digging a physician workforce hole that will take years, if not decades, to fill," end quote. Many providers and medical organizations have said that the state's abortion laws criminalize what can be a medically necessary procedure, causing doctors to leave the state and making new recruitments harder. And the changes appear to be hitting rural communities the hardest. 85% of OBGYNs in Idaho practice in the 7 most populated counties. The current study demonstrated in the remaining 37 counties, 23 OBGYN practicing obstetricians served a population of 569,000 women. At least one other, more descriptive study did not find significant differences in OBGYN's practice locations after the Dobbs decision.
A 5.8 magnitude earthquake has struck off the Kamchatka Peninsula just a week after an 8.8 magnitude quake triggered a tsunami warning along the U.S. west coast. Local alerts were activated in Russia, but no tsunami warnings have been issued in the U.S. following this latest quake. The main directorate of the Ministry of Emergency Situations in Russia has issued a tsunami warning for the Kamchatka Krai region, predicting waves of up to 19 centimeters for the Aleutsky Municipal District. The recent seismic activity has also sparked volcanic eruptions in the region, which is home to several active volcanoes within the infamous Ring of Fire. Alexei Osarov, director of the Institute of Volcanology and Seismology, described the situation as a, quote, extremely rare phenomenon that can be described as a parade of volcanic eruptions, end quote. He attributed the activity to the earthquake that activated the magma and added energy to the volcanoes. Notably, the Krasheninnikov volcano has erupted lava for the first time in nearly 600 years, with the last recorded flow being in 1463. While the area is sparsely populated and not deemed a threat to local communities, there is concern about the potential risk to aircraft flying through ash plumes. Seismologist Harold Tobin from the University of Washington stated, quote, about 40 to 50 volcanoes are actively erupting around the world at any given time. Right now is no different. Kamchatka is a very volcanically active region, end quote. A U.S. Geological Survey representative added that the earthquake likely increased the vigor of eruptions, including ash emissions.
Hot air makes it harder for engines to get a plane airborne, a problem that is set to get more common as the climate warms. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate warms, some airplanes may need to carry fewer passengers or less cargo. When an airplane roars down the runway, its engines suck in air to propel the plane forward until it's moving fast enough to take off. But on hot days, air is less dense, and it's harder for the engines to do their job. So planes need a longer runway to gather enough speed or to carry less weight to speed up faster.
On extreme hot days, even today and in the recent past, this type of weight restriction has been applied, but we are forecasting that this will get significantly more frequent, more common in the future.
Johnny Williams, a researcher at the University of Reading, studied how global warming will affect the Airbus A320 jet at 30 European airports in coming decades. He found that many airports have long enough runways for the planes to take off on hot days. But at airports with shorter runways, like Rome's Ciampino Airport, the jets may need to reduce weight more often in the summer.
As a society, we are very heavily reliant on the aviation industry, from everything from our holidays to carrying freight to, you know, putting out wildfires. So it's really important to engage with this now.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The Point Puzzle is a weekly puzzle from KPOV Community Radio in Bend. Every week, a winner from the last week will be selected from emailed answers and announced on air, and a new puzzle will be unleashed. Now for the puzzle with Pearl Stark.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for a six-letter word for things that are together. Swap two adjacent letters to get things that are apart. Well, the answer is united, which becomes untied. Our winner this week is Miko King, who listens to KBOO in Portland, Oregon.
Sharp lifters of the world, unite and take over.
The New York Times mini puzzle recently had two words that are countries if you swap their vowels, pure and tango. There are two other countries with two vowels that also become words, but this time by moving one of the vowels next to the other. So again, send me two countries with two vowels each that become words by moving one of the vowels next to the other. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Polestar with your Point Puzzle for the week of August 4th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 8, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and James Kemp. The producer is Hannah Francis and our engineer, Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Isabel Charlie, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim director of Evening News is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm John Nelson.
And I'm Sam Bowman. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.